how many DC creators can you fit on a dais day here at the Fan Expo? Thank you, everybody, for coming. I'm going to project my voice because you can see we've got three microphones up here, so I'm going to turn over the microphones to the tables to be used because I can make enough noise without them. Again, thank you very much for coming to the Amazing World of DC Comics panel. I'm going to quickly introduce all our guests here, and then we're going to have a little bit of a talk back and forth, and then we'll get me out of the picture and allow everyone here to ask questions away until about 10 or 5 to 3. Does that sound good? Great. Okay, to my immediate right, we have a gentleman who is currently writing Countdown and Detective Comics. Please correct me, anybody, if I'm a little off. We've got Paul Dini here on my right. Let's give a big hand. To Paul's right, we have a gentleman who recently drew a story in The Spirits, if I'm not mistaken, but also drew Tom Strong and Ocean for DC, Wildstorm, /ABC, as many variations of that you could fix your hands on. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Chris Sprouse, please. Next to Chris, we have a gentleman who recently drew all Flash number one, if I'm not mistaken.
Most of it.
Great. And we'll be doing Teen Titans Year One in 2008. Everybody welcome Carl Herschel, please. And next to Carl, we have a local boy who's made very good for himself, representing Toronto and Canada very well, the writer of Teen Titans Go and Legions of the Superhero in the 31st Century for the DC Kids line, as well as also writing a Wonder Girl miniseries. Please welcome Jay Torres. I'm not sure if this next gentleman has done any professional work yet, but we just thought, what the heck? We didn't have enough people here at the table, so... No, we know he's all writing All-Star Superman. Please welcome Frank Quietly, everybody. And then also very much a welcome here to Dale Egesham, who we appreciate coming up to the dais here. Dale, I'm sorry, I'm totally lost as to what you're doing. Fill us in very quickly. What are you doing now?
I'm pretending to draw the JSA right now. Trying to retain my sanity, too.
Pretending to draw the JSA. That'll take your sanity. Well, gentlemen, I was wondering if you could tell the audience, what's the one, the most unique experience that you've learned out of the books that you're working on now? The one thing that you've taken away that you haven't gone from another series, the biggest surprise that you've gotten working on this year, whether it's somebody you're working with, whether it's the characters you're working on?
Weekly Comics. Not as easy as it looks.
I'm working on a project right now that is not supposed to be solicited until it's done, and I've learned that that's definitely the way to do it.
So that project is what exactly?
We can't drag it out. Sorry.
We tried that already. We tried.
I'm working on this Teen Titans book, and the writer of it is Amy Wolfram, who writes for the Teen Titans cartoon as well as a number of other animated projects. And this is her first comics work, so I think what I'm learning is that there are a lot of ways to approach storytelling, especially from a writing standpoint in comics, that I wasn't aware of, and things that aren't obvious to people who are really accustomed to different comics conventions. I don't mean those shows, but conventions in storytelling. So I'm learning a lot from her. It's been quite an experience. I don't know if I have any specific examples, but I think you'll see. Some of the sound effects are really unconventional because she has no idea what sound effects are. And that kind of thing. I don't know. Jay, you want to follow that up?
I recently wrote this thing called A Black Canary Wedding Planner. And I found out that the numbers on it were really good, so I guess I learned that there is a market for stuff like that.
Like Chris, I was supposed to have finished Superman before they started running it, but I took so long just actually starting the project. They began publishing it when I was only halfway through the first issue, and I've been really late ever since, so I apologize.
I think for me it's been just being asked to participate in the creation of the book before the scripts are written. You know, we have a lot of discussions about the characters and what's coming up, and that's been something new for me. And I think handling the cast, the team itself, which is 17 members strong, you know, and they're all these different ages from, you know, 16 on up to 90-something. It's been a great opportunity to explore different body types and different approaches to the art and getting outside of the, you know, any kind of superhero stereotype or model, I guess, way of drawing. It's really forced me outside of the box, and that's been absolutely amazing for me.
So John Romita, in one of the panels with his father, was talking about being handed, as an artist, by a writer, crowd scenes, large books. Like, he did Contest of Champions when he was really young, and it's now haunted him ever since. We have writers and artists here on the panel. As a writer, for the writers here, what are your thoughts, your sympathies, your empathies for the artist when you start scripting a book or start plotting it out? And as artists, what are your thoughts about crowd scenes versus individuals, and how much interaction do you have with the artists or with the writers around? You know, let's not do that again if we can avoid that. What are your thoughts, Paul?
I started my career in animation, and one of the things you learn very quickly is that the more characters you throw in a scene, the more expensive it is to animate, so you keep the crowd scenes at an absolute minimum. However, that doesn't stop writers from writing, you know, something like fade-in, circus, big crowd, lots of kids running here and there. And I think you can just hear the storyboard artist and the animators just, like, cursing, like, you know, how the hell am I supposed to draw that? And really, you have to think, how the hell are they supposed to draw that? So I think that's the first responsibility of anybody who's writing either animation or comics, is to think, how is this going to play out visually? If you're just throwing it all out there because it makes sense to you, you're not, you know, in one weird little moment, you're not really analyzing it, you're not thinking in a visual way. So a lot of times what I will do is I will do some little thumbnails of, like, set pieces or gags, even if it's a spot illustration of something I'm looking for in a book, and really kind of budget those scenes. You know, in the last issue of Detective I wrote, I had a huge crowd scene, and it's like a nightmare for the artist to draw, but I kind of saved everything till that last scene where I had to have a group of people being threatened by the Joker, and then, you know, try to come out of a way of, like, at least staging it in such a way where you get the idea that there's a crowd, but that Don didn't have to draw, you know, render every last, you know, person. I mean, he did a wonderful job with it, but, you know, but that was sort of like the showpiece of that two-part episode, so I two-part issue story, so I just saved it all for then. You kind of have to, you know, keep that in mind and save your punches for when they really matter, and keep in mind what's going to look good and what the artist can realistically draw.
Speaking as an artist, I actually don't mind crowd scenes. I'm one of those freaky people that likes to draw those covers with, like, 1,000 people on them and stuff like that. It's just, it's fun. It's probably making, you know, talking to that, you know, 12-year-old, 14-year-old in me that liked seeing, you know, all those George Perez covers with, you know, JLA versus, you know, whoever, you know, some 30 people on a cover or something. But it's a lot of fun to do. It is difficult, and I don't have issues with the writers. I have issues with the editor, who is just like, well, just draw faster. It's like, oh, okay. It's like, it's still 30 people, you know. But, yeah, I don't have a problem with them.
So, Carl, working with someone coming out of who's not been in the comic book industry, how do you two interact in that regard?
Really uniquely in this case, because Amy's never written comics before, she has no idea what a script looks like or how to pace it. I mean, she's coming from an animation background. So what happens is, I guess our editor told her, he gave her a few simple rules to follow, one of which was that she should average about 5 panels a page. But when I get the scripts, there are 5 panels written on the page, but the panels, I mean, like,
do 3 things in one panel.
Yeah, either 3 things in one panel, or sometimes there'll be 5 panels on a page that should take maybe 2 panels, and I'll have to. I do a lot of juggling to kind of reorchestrate the flow of the story, and it's cool. I mean, it's nice for me. It ends up actually being more work for me, not just because I'm sort of almost co-plotting and co-writing at that point, but because when left to my own devices, I'm dealing with, you know, the guilt of trying to, you know, trying to arrange it in a way that suits my own sensibilities. So I end up with usually 8 panel pages on average now, which is more than I would generally do, you know, for someone who had experience writing a comic script. So it's taking me longer, but I think it's worth it in the long run. As for the crowd stuff, it's funny. I keep thinking, you know, like I'll be hunched over my table and read an article on the computer where someone's talking about comics versus movies and talking about how, you know, like comics are great because we don't have there's no budget. I mean, you can do whatever you want on the page. There's no budget. Do anything. And I'm thinking, there is absolutely a budget. There's a budget of your sanity because I mean, every time you have to draw something, you know, a crowd scene or like 1,000 cars exploding on a street or shards of glass or something, it's, you know, it's a lot of work and it's a lot of time. And that's about it.
Well, it's funny listening to Carl talk about Amy. It kind of reminds me of when I started out, and I pretty much scripted the same way, not realizing, you know, what I was putting the artist through, and having to learn how to, you know, economize on the images and such. But along the way, I also learned that it depends on the story, depends on the artist. For example, on Teen Titans Go, I work mostly with Todd Knock, who, like Chris, loves doing big brawls and crowd scenes. And even if I don't ask for it, he'll go wide and he'll draw the entire crowd around, you know, like a fight with 2 people. And then other people prefer to draw a little tighter. So I guess in a case like that, you'd start with an establishing shot. For example, we just finished working on Amazon's Attack, which, you know, you can't get around these big, you know, warlike scenes with 100 Amazons and Cyclops and whatever else. So I guess you establish it, and then you give the artist the choice to either, you know, shoot it tighter for each subsequent panel or just do whatever they want to.
So Frank, when you're dealing with Grant on All-Star Superman, what does he give you, and what interactions do you have back and forth with regards to what you like to draw, what you don't see that, you know, it's not working for you?
How do you even decipher a Grant Morrison script?
Don't they just download it into your brain?
Yeah, very much. When we started on All-Star Superman, I asked Grant to give me as many scenes as possible that were set either in outer space or in the snowy wastes or in the desert or in some zone where there's no backgrounds, and he promised he would, and I've had almost none of it so far. So I'm partially blaming him for my lateness. But with the crowd scene thing, like Chris, I actually enjoy drawing crowd scenes as well. It's not cost effective, but I just, you know, you're drawing a street or a mall full of people, and I just enjoy making all these background figures kind of interact with each other. You know, and it's, as I say, it doesn't pay the rent, but it's fun.
Yeah, I remember it was at a convention in Florida, it was like 2003, and I ran into Leonard Kirk there, and he was penciling JSA at the time, and he said, "Well, how's he feeling with the book?" And he just took this page out of his portfolio. It was a JSA page, and it looked like he was going to cry, and there was like a million people on it. That's all I've ever heard. I heard the same stories from Steve Sadowski, that this book is just a meat grinder for pencilers. Be afraid. And Jeff really likes writing that stuff, but he doesn't expect it to be, you know, he doesn't expect every person to be drawn in those scenes. But, you know, to have a big crowd scene or a lot of heroes, it really adds to the scope of the book, the feel that you want for a team book. And I'll often do it on my own. I'll add crowd scenes. I'll show more of the street and the buildings. And I agree with everybody here. I love the crowd scenes. I love drawing the individuals. I'll often, when characters are walking down the street, you know, there'll be an open window, and you'll be able to see somebody inside the window. And I like to add all that detail, too. So I don't mind it. You know, I'm not so crazy about drawing, you know, a whole bunch of cars and stuff, because I don't know anything about cars, but I mean, you know, I've drawn a huge overview of the city with a ship flying over that wasn't called for in the script, but I just wanted that grandeur, so it really, I guess you just got to play it by ear.
Does it piss you off when they put a caption box on top of the woman in the window that you drew?
Oh, yeah. You can expect that kind of thing.
So, Paul, I was going to ask a question regarding, you're writing Countdown now. You talked about writing weekly comics. Uh-huh. quick question. What were you guys thinking? No, that's a little quick question. But, how does your approach in terms of change when it's now weekly versus monthly? Are you just go with ideas?
A lot of the story was plotted out in advance because when we started working on it last fall, I took a couple of months to work out the story with the staff at DC Comics, and there was time for other writers and artists to get acclimated to what we were doing and also make plans as to how certain events would tie into Countdown and also emerge from Countdown. So and also I have a really great team of five writers working on the project, and we have a rotation set up, so each week we'll go over what the next issue is going to be. We'll plot it out in detail. I'll write up an outline, and then the writer takes that, and in very short turnaround time, we get a really, really good workable script. So we keep that up every week, and it's actually manageable. It's easy to it's not easy, but it's a workable way to do weekly comics. And it takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of effort on my part, on the writer's part, and on the DC editorial team. But we're hitting the dates and we're making the story work.
I want to send this down the panel, but what is everybody's opinion of these events, these large year-long driven events that has consumed like both companies now?
I think to some degree you have to do them because if one company does it, the other one has to step up. And I think that overall, I think they generate a lot of excitement and interest in the characters. I know that sometimes they're hard to follow because it's something you'll be following one series and then it'll be continued in another series, so you'll have to buy that series as well. But I think they do generate a sense of excitement, as a big event. And I think a lot of people kind of like the idea of regular serialized comics. I think they also, working on Detective, where they like the done in one stories, they like that just as much too. So I think, you have a fair group of both out there.
Chris, you had some good interactions in the working in the sort of the Wildstorm ABC with Alan Moore and the characters interacting. What's your opinion of this sort of the event driven industry now that we seem to be in the middle of?
I basically haven't been involved in too many. The project I'm working on now is unfortunately one of those, and unfortunately because it's got strict deadlines, so it has to come out when it's supposed to come out, and it's tough. I couldn't do it unless the situation where I said earlier that it's completely done before it's solicited. I don't know how somebody, I'm amazed that they've made these things work. They've come out on time and stuff. And the event-driven industry, ABC wasn't supposed to be an event. It was supposed to be, an ongoing comic series that just Alan's little playground. And he had a lot of hyperbole when he started. He was going to change the face of comics and stuff like that. But basically, he wanted to write some fun comics again and work with people that he'd been working with at other Image companies. And it didn't seem like an event at the time. It just seemed like a fun job was starting. That's all. It didn't. Maybe that was because the marketing wasn't all it could be at times. We didn't get splashed around. We had the typical DC house ad, and I think we had a poster that most comic shops didn't even put on the walls. So I don't think that there was all that much promotion. If there was an event feeling to it, I think that was in spite of the marketing we had. But
Carl and Jay, you're working on very specific books, be it Titans related or whatever, in the banner of, within the guise of all these giant events. What is it like to be, do you feel included in the DC universe or in that part of the thing? Or is it, do these things just run away like a behemoth? Or is that good? Is that good to be sitting there working on your own type of material that is divorced from that type of the stringent deadlines of things that Chris is talking to?
Yeah, I'm blissfully ignorant of most of it. The stuff I'm doing is completely outside. I'm doing a month's worth of Countdown covers, but aside from that, I've got nothing to do with it. I think those events are cool as long as they're self-contained. when they start taking over the entire line of books, I think it becomes a little bit, a little bit much to follow. But I prefer to work on stuff that I like, miniseries anyway, because they have they have a beginning and an ending, and you're not jumping into the middle of something that you have to really worry about a lot of continuity. And it has it's a finite thing. It's got a satisfying ending. That was one of my misgivings about the work I did on Superman with Greg Rucka, is that I was dying to do that book, and I love Greg's writing, and it was right before Infinite Crisis, and it was impossible to just tell a Superman story in an issue, because he was usually moaning about something that was happening in some other book, one of the Crisis books or whatever. Whatever was leading up to Infinite Crisis, I don't remember what it was. So yeah, I'm quite jealous of Frank's All-Star stuff, because he gets to do, it's pure Superman fun every issue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'm as a reader, I like the done-in-one type material that Paul was talking about, and I usually wait for the trade and stuff, so the big events, I'm always behind all those big events as a reader. But as a writer, I'm okay with whatever Dan wants.
For a writer, he's a man of few words. We appreciate that.
I haven't yet tried one of these big crossover things. I tend to get things in collected form and read it from start to finish. I'm going to give 52 a try. I get the comps anyway, so I'm saving them up. But I don't know when I'm going to get around to reading that much, because I really don't have the time to read an awful lot, just because I work long hours and, but as Carol was saying, I really like the fact that I work in a book where I get the script and I do the artwork for it, and that's it, and it's not, we're not having to change things because of what's happening in another book, and we're not having to tighten the deadline even more because of because our part of the story is part of somebody else's story, I don't know, maybe when I give it a try I like it, but it's just not something I've
Well, you're in a unique situation, because you're in the All-Star line of books was a big event. It was certainly publicized as a big event, but yet it's strictly the opposite of those, because it's literally
stripped down
to the actual characters, the singularity of those characters.
Yeah.
What types of pressures does being involved, all of a sudden, hey, do you want to draw a Superman book, and then all of a sudden it's All-Star this, starring Frank and Grant and the other Frank, and
yeah.
What types of pressures does that put on you in terms, compared to what you would normally have experienced?
Made it a bit worse. But, the pressure is always, it's always deadlines and money. It's just always the same. So, as I say, I'm just really happy that I don't have the additional problem of other people's deadlines too. So
Dale, working on a JSA book with so many characters that other writers are using in other books,
mm-hmm.
What are some of the intricacies of that?
Oh boy.
And yeah, we've got 30 minutes. So go.
I have no idea. As the event thing, I think it's good and it's bad. Like a company-wide event thing. It's when you take 52 and you read it in one shot, you have all the comics and you read it as one big story. It's not something you can actually find somewhere else. It would be too big to make a movie about that. It makes it really unique to comics, and I like that. I really like that a lot. It does sort of move the whole company in one direction, which can handcuff you creatively, I guess. But overall, I like them. Let's see. What was your question again?
I'm just boom. It went right by. I was listening intently. That was good. I think it was more about the character dealing with a team book,
mm-hmm.
and how much extra input do you get to say, oh, now you can't do that with that character because over in Detective, Paul is doing this with Batman.
I think you're always balancing that sort of thing because, there's when you're talking about continuity with the characters, there's so many different... Everybody's got a slightly different take, but I always like to have a look at them all and sort of like take the best of all of them. And I don't want to do anything radical, and I don't want to be boring either. You know, I want it to reflect, you know, my own style and the way I approach the characters, but I like to stay true to what's out there, and it's a balancing act, and it's always there, you know, no matter what's going on.
I'm going to go back to you, Paul. I want to ask everybody on the panel, what is the best thing about working with or for DC Comics, and what is the story, if you have one, that would, a short story that would symbolize that?
Start that.
I could have said easy, like, what's, you know, what's the difference between this company and that company, but let's, you know.
I'd say there's a fair amount of freedom in, you know, what I want to do, and, you know, creative freedom, and they've been very supportive, of, you know, when I come up with some of the stranger ideas I've had, either for a detective or some of the special projects I'm working on now, and some of those are well over a year away, but I'm very enthusiastic about them, and you know, I have a lot of support from the editorial staff, and from Dan and Paul and my various editors. So, you know, usually when I have an idea and it seems to fit with what they're doing, I get a green light. So that's tremendous.
I haven't actually worked for DC itself, you know, in New York since 1993 probably. But, you know, obviously they own Wildstorm and they're still there at the end, you know, of everything we do at Wildstorm. But part of the best thing about working for DC is that they're DC Comics. They're a big company. They've got, you know, all of the corporate infrastructure going on. You know, your paycheck's not going to be late, stuff like that. You know, all that day-to-day ordinary stuff. It's pretty simple with DC. You know, it's very strict. You know, when you have to turn in certain things, how many pages you can turn in, when you're going to get paid, and it usually gets done. And that's nice. I've worked for smaller companies that, you know, have not paid me, you know, stuff like that, or people that, you know, it took a year to get a paycheck one time, and things like that that you just don't have happen with DC, or at least I haven't yet. Working for Wildstorm, though, as part of DC, the best thing about that, and this can also be bad, is it's sometimes like self-publishing. No one messes with us. Nobody interferes and tells us to redraw or do anything like that, but it's kind of, I get the impression it's kind of a small operation, and sometimes it's really hard to get anybody to notice if you've got a problem or something. You know, it's like, you know, in the back, you know, holding your hand up, waving frantically, and they're busy looking around doing other stuff. So that can be a problem. But the best thing, like I said, big company aspect of it helps in those day-to-day things. But I've never really had any interference or demands for changes or anything like that. So creatively, I guess they've been good and let me do whatever I want. So that's nice as well.
Carl? Yeah, my answer is, I guess, kind of similar. I think the best thing about working for DC Comics for me is just the editorial, the editors I've had the chance to work with. I've been working mostly with Eddie Braganza since I started there, which is about five years ago. I don't know how long. But there's a lot of support. I mean, Eddie has a few key ideas that he has for the books he's working on, and they're things he feels really strongly about, character-wise or story-wise. And I have really in-depth, interesting conversations with him about the direction of, not the direction of the title so much as the direction of the characters and the kind of story arcs and things. He's a really cool guy to talk to about that stuff. I guess at this point, I'm really happy that I've kind of banked enough time there and earned enough respect from some of those guys that they basically just give me free rein to do what I want. This Teen Titans thing, I barely talk to them. We have conference calls where we talk about what's going to happen in an issue, and then Amy and I, you know, go off and we'll rewrite stuff and work on stuff. And Eddie doesn't really see it till it's finished for the most part. He almost never asks me for changes. And the few times he has, in working with him, they've been right on the money. I mean, the changes have made the pages better. So I mean, I like the relationship a lot. I think it's a really creative relationship with a lot of mutual respect. It's a nice environment to tell stories in. Also, they gave me a DC watch for Christmas.
Yeah, this is going to sound really shallow, but I like the fringe benefits, the comp box, the free meals, you know, free travel, getting to hang out with people whose work I admire and participate in events like this. I think that's the best part. And the worst is probably just, you know, deadlines. It'd be great to just be allowed to do what you needed to do in the time that you wanted to do it in and get paid in advance. But that's not how it works.
Frank?
I reckon the best thing about DC Comics, and I kind of agree with everything that's been said so far, but in addition to all the usual superhero stuff and the big stuff and everything, the fact that we've also got Vertigo, I like some of the superhero stuff, but I tend to read more of the Vertigo stuff, and I think the fact that they're still willing to put out books that they know aren't going to sell that well, and they're willing to let creators have a lot of creative control, and they're willing to support creator-owned projects as well. For a big, big company, I think that's pretty good. So.
Yeah, I totally agree about the Vertigo thing, too. I'm so glad that they've kept that going, and it's sort of like, nurturing that niche, and I think we really need that to maybe step away from superheroes as well as new superheroes. And the thing I like about DC too is there's a lot of history to the characters, and you're sort of standing in the back of that in whatever you do. I mean, the JSA is the first superhero team in existence, sort of, you know. And there's a lot of old characters there, and you can't manufacture that. So you're sort of living up to that, and you're participating in it, and I really like that. And I find the company just a really stable place to work. It's creatively on JSA, we've been given carte blanche to do what we want, to make the book as goofy as we possibly can. And we can go with humor. We can we're just having such a great time, and we're allowed to do that. And we're producing a superhero book that's just a little different from everything else. And I'm glad that we're in an environment where that can happen. And your editor is, your pals, and everybody's pulling for everybody else as a result. So that's great. That's what I love about it.
Well, I'm going to ask one more question of the dais here, and then we'll get to everyone else's questions. Zuda Comics, what do you all think of it?
Don't know very much about it other than what I read in the press release.
I haven't even read the press release.
We're talking now about the web initiative that DC Comics has started up, where they will allow anyone basically who passes enough of a quality measure to put their comics up on this Zuda site, to where they will, the people who do it will own the copyright, but DC would still own the trademark, I guess. So basically, it's a way to grab a hold of the piece of the web comic world and bring that into the focus.
Yeah, I guess
we got to get some press releases for in the comic. Yeah, we're gonna have to stick in the press releases.
You might get more attention going through this with DC, but I don't see why can't you do that on your own anyway. I mean, I'm not bashing it. It's just sort of for very little money, you can do that on your own. But again, maybe DC's planning to promote the heck out of this, and people will get attention, and that would be good for them, I suppose.
So for those who have heard about or read the press release...
Yeah, I've been kind of following it since its inception, because Kwanzaa Johnson, who's heading it up, got in touch with some of us, myself and Ramon Perez, who I share a studio with, he's been doing webcomics on his own for the last 4 years. It's a strip called Butternut Squash. And it's an interesting initiative. I mean, I think it's cool that they're branching out into that medium. As Chris said, there's really all of our, the big question from all of us was that why would you do it? I mean, it's absolutely free to install WordPress or some kind of blogging software and put your comics up for free. The only difference is that DC's paying you to do it. So there's no money in webcomics unless you figure out a way to monetize it by selling merchandise or collected books or something. DC will actually pay you to do the strips, whatever. I think they have some sort of contest or something. I mean, I think you can submit stuff to them and it's sort of like an American Idol kind of thing, I guess. By which they'll keep publishing the winners' stuff. And the rules have changed, well, significantly from the time they announced it up to now, in that previously they owned the copyright, and now in the press releases and stuff they're sending out to people, it's clear that I guess there was enough of a negative reaction to that now you own the copyright to whatever you put on there with them. And I guess it works probably in the same way that the Vertigo and other Wildstorm creator-owned things work, in that I think they have the right to keep distributing stuff in collected versions and things like that, but you'll always actually own the property and be getting whatever percentage of the thing. Again, no, I mean, it's stuff you can do on your own. It really depends on how you want to approach, you know, your comics publishing. It's interesting. I'm eager to see where it goes. You know anything?
No.
Okay. All right, we're going to open up the floor to questions. Hannah, if you can make sure you project your voice as annoyingly as I'm doing. The lady in the far in the back. I heard the second question, which is about writing for DC Comics. How would you do that? What was the first question again, sir?
About the Zuda Comics.
Google Zuda Comics. It'll be all over the place when you get back to the internet. But about writing, and how do you branch in to that?
Well, for me, I was sort of recruited by DC. I'd done stuff in the small press world, and I guess the first editor was this lady named Lisa Hawkins, who I actually never met before she left the company. And we'd never even spoken on the phone. It was all by email. She had read some of my material that I did for Oni Press and asked me if I'd be interested in writing Teen Titans Go, and it sort of went from there.
Is that the way now, almost? It's almost come up through the small press or come across through another medium like movies, TV?
That seems to be the best way, is like, you know, through the small press, because there you have something you can actually send that's been published, or a leaf behind if you have a meeting with somebody. Which also shows you can, you know, work in a comics medium.
Okay, let's take another question. I'll weave over from one side of the room to the other. So down here in front.
Just if you can go kind of across and just update any projects that maybe have been up, or just what each of you have coming up in the future that we can look forward to.
Well, I'm going to be on JSA for the foreseeable future, a couple of years, I hope.
I can say that.
And I'm going to be on All-Star Superman for the next 8 months or so.
Anything after that?
I haven't decided yet.
I just finished 3 fill-in issues of Wonder Woman in advance of Gail's run that sort of wraps up all the Amazon's attack stuff and leads into Wonder Girl, which is a 6-issue miniseries kicking off in September. Teen Titans Go is continuing as far as I know. And I'm also going to be taking over Legion of Superheroes in the 31st Century, I think, starting around issue 11.
Carl?
I'm halfway through drawing Teen Titans Year One, which is a 6-issue miniseries, which comes out in January. After that, I'm doing a 5-issue zombie miniseries with Peter Milligan for Wildstorm,
nice.
Which I'm pretty excited about. And aside from that, I'm doing weekly webcomics with a bunch of my pals from the studio I work in here. It's called the site's transmissionx.com, and the strip's called The Abominable Charles Christopher. It's about a yeti. And that's it.
In the immediate future, just a few more Midnighter covers, and then I'm going to disappear for several months and work on this miniseries that I can't talk about yet. But look for something November, December. I think they're going to start promoting it. Yeah, for Wildstorm.
Well, I've got Countdown going until at least the early part of next year, and then Detective at least and until the end of next year. So run on that.
Right here?
I have 2 questions. The Perez Avengers JLA thing that was done 3 years ago, are you guys going to do any more of that? And how does the Lightning Saga and everything else come to the final crisis as in the commodity original guy that was back in the 70s. Crossover with Marvel, any more crossovers? And how does the old commodity series 70s tail into the final crisis and the countdown? That's how we know.
As far as commanding goes, keep reading Countdown.
Well, what about my other question?
Marvel jail? No idea.
There's no plans or anything like that, because I have Perez and Javier Perez and Wolfen. There was talk about that from Jeanette when she was still involved. They were going to do another series. They were going to do another crossover.
I'm like Chris. Right here.
Question for Paul. I wondered if you could give us any insight into the editorial discussions about the use of the monitors in Countdown, because to me, it just always feels like the overt hand of the editor coming in and plucking down and moving things around. It feels just too forced to me. Are you comfortable with the way they're used?
The monitors, the way they started out in Countdown, may not be exactly the way they finished up. So, you know, look for some changes as far as, you know, what's been established with the monitors. That's really all I can say about them at this point.
In the hat.
Yeah. There's a history of problems marrying famous characters. We've seen that with Little Abner, Spider-Man, Superman. How is DC planning on keeping the characters Black Canary, Green Arrow interesting? And do you think it's actually a really good idea to marry them off and keep them to be the unique characters that they are? Oh, and also, how many of you guys knew that August 2007 is the 60th anniversary of the Black Canary?
I think you keep those characters interesting by having good writers and artists. Frankly, I can come up with new and interesting ideas, but I'll let that... Did I shut that question down?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, sorry about that.
Let's go over here. Who else has questions? Right there.
It might be a tough question, but the Legion of Superheroes, it's their 50th anniversary this coming year. There's some confusing things happening with Francis Manapal and, I guess, Jim Shooter, rumored to be taking over the ongoing Legion title right now. But then also in Lightning Saga, we have the original Legion of Superheroes come back. Are we looking at a future with two Legion books, or are we...
Three. Well, I think there are three different iterations of the Legion out there, so look for them too. I really don't know where it's all going to line up, but it will at some point, I'm pretty sure.
In the back.
One question for Paul, one for the whole panel. The first one to Paul. Why is Keith Giffen doing layouts on, or some thumbnails on Countdown and some issues he's not? And then for the whole panel, can you tell us one great thing that's going to be coming up that you did that you're very proud of in your books, whatever book you want to pick? Any neat thing?
Keith was, when we started Countdown, he was still working on 52, and then he had a couple of other projects to finish before he could get to Countdown. Now he's on the book on a regular basis, and he's doing regular layouts on each issue. So he's just coming up to speed on that. As far as cool things coming up in the books, I got a story for next year which has Tweedledum and Tweedledee as the new gang bosses of Gotham City. Pretty wacky.
Sound like a broken record here, but I can't really say anything about it. It's a really cool story. Everybody involved in it is just sort of like, ooh, this is going to be so neat, you know, when it comes out. So...
We're all joining the cast of Lost, and you can't talk about it. No spoilers.
I'm pretty. I think I'm happiest with the depiction of Aqualad in this Teen Titans thing. He's that character's had, you know, no really concrete history, and he's been sort of disrespected and gone unused for several years. I certainly didn't know anything about him, and we've kind of reinvented him a little as a kind of a complete comedic foil. And quite a gimp, but I really like him. I think people will either love it or hate it, but it's certainly the most fun I have drawing anything all week.
Well, I hope everyone picks up Wonder Girl. We're having a lot of fun doing it. Sanford Green's the artist; he's doing a great job. So please look for it starting September 12th.
Frank, what's your favorite thing that you've done or are working on in All-Star Superman now that you're most proud of?
Have you drawn anything cool lately? Like any panel?
I've hardly drawn anything lately. The neat thing I'd like to do in the future is actually make a deadline. But I'm at the moment I'm getting a couple of pages of script ahead of what I'm actually drawing, so I pretty much don't know what's happening. So
I think to me it was just surviving issue 6 of the Lightning Saga, which had the JSA, the JLA, and the Legion characters all in that book, and God. I didn't know anything about the Legion. I was totally lost. And there was one panel where we had, you know, 3 different versions of each member of the Legion all in one panel, and I almost had a stroke, so I'm really happy that I'm still here to talk about it, so that's the best thing.
Over there in the back.
I have 2 questions. One for Paul. Mm-hmm. How many worlds will we see by the end of Countdown? And for Jay, I'd like to know, the miniseries with Wonder Girl, will it affect Wonder Woman's world and or Wonder Girl at the end of it? Will it have any repercussions, or is it just a miniseries that we can enjoy?
Well, as to how many worlds, we'll see plenty. And,
can I give a number?
I don't know if we'll see all 52, but we may see representatives from all 52. I mean, a lot of things will happen with characters from those respective worlds, but we may not spend a lot of time on those worlds.
As for Wonder Girl, the main purpose of the miniseries is to wrap up a lot of her loose ends from the last year or two with, you know, Connor dying and Amazon's attack, and trying to sort of just move the character forward and give her own thing to do. So she goes on a kind of Herculean quest in this, and it involves Hercules and involves some of the some of the new gods, and we take it from there. As to whether or not it's going to, you know, meet up with Gail's Wonderman, we actually haven't even discussed that, but for the first 6 issues, or at least the mini series itself, it should be pretty self-contained and hopefully enjoyable to read.
So we have 4 minutes, so brevity in your questions is appreciated, and the hat.
This is for Paul Dini. I've heard that the Joker is getting sort of a reboot of his origin, very different from the Killing Joke, where he's sort of more of like an explosions expert before he became the Joker and he tussled with Batman and that sort of thing. Just want to know, you know, if the particular, maybe the reasoning behind it, or if it was kind of scary undoing like an Alan Moore story. And another general question, I guess, is just, if you know any updates about Superboy, apparently DC is in big legal wrangle with Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, where they can't refer to him directly as Superboy. Just want to know if that's problems.
As far as the Joker story, is that the one that's running in Batman Confidential now?
I've heard that, yeah.
Okay, I haven't been keeping up with that lately. I get the comic boxes and they sit in the corner and, you know, I'm going to save it enough and then give them out as, you know, free comics for Halloween to any kid who comes to the house. I think there's room enough to expand on what the Joker's origins were without conflicting with anything. But I have, like I said, I've not read that story. As far as the
Superboy.
Superboy. I'm not that close to it. I don't know what's going on with it. So the last I heard was that was still in litigation. So until there's some sort of decision, I really couldn't say what's going on.
I think the family's lost something the latest round, but it'll go for rounds and rounds and rounds. I think. Very far in the back.
Team Titans, you guys have done a great job, but did you mean, or just turn out that the most powerful characters are all female? And the thing with Batman, do you find when writing Batman or doing Batman, a lot of people, you know, he's got a huge following, probably one of the biggest or favorite characters in comics, but when the movies come out, it seems like the writers suddenly have to revamp the character because everybody's seen him on the silver screen, and then update with the cars, like, yeah, this thing, everything thought.
I mean, no, because usually we're not tied into whatever the movie is doing. The movie is are the movies, and the books are the books. So when I took on writing Detective, Dan and I agreed that, you know, the thing I really wanted to do was done in one stories that sort of harkened back to an older style of storytelling. And that seems to have paid off pretty well. But if anything, you know, we're doing kind of like a classic version of Batman where you can sit down and pick up the book and read it and get a sense of the character. And there may be elements that will continue from story to story, you know, like there's an overall world continuity, but the stories are self-contained. And so that really doesn't, it really doesn't matter what's going on with different animated versions of the character or movies. You know, we're, at least on Detective, I'm sort of left alone to sort of take that, well, you know, one bit of Batman's life and develop it that way.
And the female characters in the Teen Titans being the most powerful?
Well, we sort of inherited all this, all these characters in this cast, so the credit goes to, you know, the guys who came before us who set that up.
Yeah, I'm only dealing with Wonder Girl, you know, in her, from her, some of her earlier appearances. So we definitely kind of deal with her being the most powerful person on the team in that the guys are kind of humbled by her, and she doesn't really know her own strength. But I don't even know who's it? Wonder Girl?
Miss Martian?
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, it's 2:55. I'm sorry we couldn't get to more questions, but I thank you all for coming out. And I also thank Paul, Chris, Carl, Jay, Frank, and Dale.